a really, really deep hole. We're going to have to find something bigger. So they find a football-sized rock. Throw it in. And they listen. Nothing. And so they look around, and finally they see a railroad tie. And they think, well, if this hole has a bottom, this railroad tie will find it, and we'll get it in there. So one of them gets on one side, the other gets on the other. They heave in the hole, and they shove this railroad tie into the hole. About 10 seconds later, this wild-eyed, crazy goat comes running through the woods faster than they've ever seen any goat run, jumps up into the air, and shoots down the hole. I don't know what in the world's going on. So about 5 minutes later, guy in overalls, obviously looks like a farmer, walking through the woods looking for something. They see him. They say, hey, what you doing? He said, oh, I'm just looking for my goat. You seen him? They said, yeah, we saw him. So about 5 minutes ago, this wild-eyed, crazy-looking goat came running through the woods, jumped up in the air, and shot down this hole. Farmer said, no, that's not my goat. My goat's chained to a railroad tie. Yep. Well, actually what we're going to see is that dinosaurs have been chained to something. But it's not a railroad tie. It's the false idea of evolution. And it's time that we cut that chain and we reconnect them to what they were supposed to be connected to in the first place. And that's their awesome, amazing creator who brought them into existence. You're looking at a dinosaur. Most of you probably can't tell me the name of this dinosaur. It happens that, generally speaking, if I ask an audience for the name of the dinosaurs, there is a category of people in the audience that, generally speaking, get the right answer to the names of the dinosaurs. It's not 65 years old and above. It's not the 40-year-old and above. It's not the 25-year-old and above. Generally speaking, the people who are most adept at saying the polysyllabic dinosaur names are about 12 and below. Now, let that sink in a minute, and when you can ask a 12-year-old what kind of dinosaur this is, and they can tell you an Oviraptor, then you ask yourself the next question, where did they get that piece of information? Because I know where they didn't get it. I don't know what an Oviraptor is, and my 12-year-old son, grandson does, so he got that information from somewhere that wasn't me. And where is he or she, where is she getting that? And we're going to find out some of that. Now, Oviraptor I put up here because the name means egg stealer. That's what the name of this dinosaur means. It's supposedly egg stealer. Because they found this dinosaur by a nest of eggs, and the egg that it had basically in its claws was crushed. And they said, well, that dinosaur is obviously stealing eggs, so we're going to name it the Oviraptor. That's what its name is, because once a dinosaur is named, generally speaking, that name does not change, especially if that name gets put in literature. The problem is, we had access later, after the find, to x-rays and things of that nature that you could look inside the eggs that were in the nest, and guess what kind of nest it was? Was an Oviraptor nest, and so it was actually a mother protecting the eggs that she had laid there in the nest, but her name is Egg Stealer because somebody for about 2 decades thought that she was stealing eggs instead of protecting them. And here's what you know. There was a dinosaur that was this size, this shape. It was on a nest of about, I think it was about 20 different eggs, but there's something they did get wrong, and that's what the dinosaur was doing there. They said it was stealing eggs when it was actually protecting the eggs. So here's what you need to understand about information regarding dinosaurs and any other thing. You need to understand what we know for sure and what we assume or interpret from that. You know, for many years in my mother's generation and even some younger than that, because Christians in the Lord's church didn't have an explanation for dinosaurs, my mother was teaching a class to ladies, and she talked about the work that we were doing, and the ladies said, well, we need to hear about that. And she said, why? They said, well, because the preacher here had a class for the congregation and explained to us that dinosaurs never existed, that they were made up, that evolutionists have said there were dinosaurs, but there were not. And anything you hear about dinosaurs is false because there never was such a thing as a dinosaur. Every congregation I've ever been to, including this one, someone came up and told me that very thing today, 5 minutes before the lesson. Almost everyone, someone has come up and said, well, when I was growing up, we were told there was no dinosaurs. There were no dinosaurs. Now, what's going to happen when, like my coworker, Jeff Miller, He goes out to Montana this last summer and he starts digging in the ground. He and a couple other friends of his that work with us at AP. And one of them digs up a very rare Tyrannosaurus Rex tooth out of the ground. What's going to happen when you tell a kid there's no such thing as dinosaurs and they go dig up a bone themselves out of the ground and they realize, oh, well, yes, there is. There were dinosaurs. And my mom, my dad, my grandma, my granddad told me there weren't. What else did they get wrong about this? Well, the fact of the matter is, we need to know about these kinds of things. Because, like we read earlier in the sermon this morning, the mother who was writing to us about her 15 and 16 year old, she said his problem was dinosaurs. That's where it all started. And we're going to see what that problem is. This is, you probably would never guess this one, and here's why. Have you seen Jurassic Park number one? The movie Jurassic Park number one. In number one, there was supposed to be a group of dinosaurs that were about 6.5, 7 feet tall. They're supposed to be real, real intelligent. They had that huge sickle-shaped claw on their foot, and they could jump 8, 9, 10, 15 feet at a time. You remember what that dinosaur was called? The Velociraptor, right? Okay, the problem with Jurassic Park number one and it presenting the Velociraptor is that it build the Velociraptor 6.5, 7 feet tall. This is the actual size of a Velociraptor. It's about 3 feet tall. And it doesn't have that huge claw. In fact, it's got a small claw that you could really probably handle with a good pair of toenail clippers. Now, why in the world would Jurassic Park number one blow up the Velociraptor 400% bigger than it was? Okay, well, if you're running around in the jungle with a belt-feed 12-gauge shotgun full of buckshot, does this little creature present a very big problem to you? No, but if you've got a 6.5-foot dinosaur that has a claw that can rip you open in a single swipe and it can jump 15 feet in the air in a single leap, is that a more exciting story? Yes. So they knew it wasn't accurate information, but they put it out there anyway to make the story more exciting. Is that right? Yes, it is. And so here's what I'm trying to say. There's some stuff that you're going to read in books, you're going to see in movies, you're going to see in magazines about dinosaurs that are exactly right. Some things. But there's some things you're going to see about dinosaurs that are exactly positively wrong. And sometimes it's put forth intentionally wrong to make it more exciting, to make it more fun, to make it more attention-grabbing, etc. And so let's see what historically has been the problem of the dinosaurs. Why in the world would a generation ago explain to their young people dinosaurs never existed? What's the problem? Why do you feel like you have to do that? Well, look with me here. This guy right here in the middle is reading the BC Boy comics. There's, it looks like a Tyrannosaurus Rex. He's chasing this guy. Looks like a caveman. And he says, this story is make-believe. And the kid over here says, there were no dinosaurs in the time of cave people. Now, let that soak in just a minute. Try to think back to creation, Genesis 1. Let that soak in. Now, Flory up here says this. No people ever saw a dinosaur, by Flory. When early humans appeared on Earth, dinosaurs had already been dead for millions of years. People found out about dinosaurs from their fossils. Notice what's being put forth. Number one, that idea of cave people. The idea that somehow there were lower, underdeveloped mentally people that were closer to our monkey-like primate ancestors. You know, those kind of guys that didn't know how to carry on a conversation with the girl that they like, and so they hit them over the head with a club and drug them back to their cave. That's a cave man. But when you look at the story of creation, you see God creating Adam from the dirt, and immediately being able to talk to Adam in a very intelligent way. Adam can name all of the animals. Were there ever primate-like precursors to Adam? No. Now, did some people live in caves in the past? Absolutely positively. You know why you would live in caves in the past? Well, there's a couple of real good reasons. Caves have a constant temperature of about 53 degrees. In the summer, 53 degrees is exciting because it's not too hot. In the winter, 53 degrees is exciting because you're not freezing to death. And you miss out on a lot of the parasites and bugs and things that would be outside of a cave. Caves offer and provide some really good shelter. Were there any precursor people with brute beetle brows, knuckle-dragging, shoulder-humped, primate-like creatures that came before Adam? No, because Adam is the first of his kind. So that whole idea of cave people is false. But then notice this. No people were on the earth at the time of dinosaurs. Says who? You know, what you've been told is they dig up a dinosaur fossil and they say, okay, we've got the fossil. And they do. But then they said, and this fossil is 70 million years old. Well, hold on just a second. Did it come with a tag? Does it say 70? Where did you get that idea of 70 million years old? And the problem is their dating methods are skewed and are inaccurate, and those fossils are not 70 million years old. And we're going to look at some of that. But here's the problem. You read Genesis chapter 1, straightforward, simple understanding of the text. On what day did God create all land-living creatures? It's real simple. Day 6. You read Genesis chapter 1, straightforward reading of the text. On what day did God create humans? Day 6. Now, some people have tried to say, yeah, but those days, hey, they could have been millions of years. They could have just gone on and on. No, the Bible doesn't allow for that for a couple reasons. Number one, it says evening and a morning, day one, evening, morning, day two. Every time the term evening and morning is used, it always means a literal 24-hour day. But number two, the main reason for that is, in Exodus chapter 20, verses 8 and following, it says, for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore, he told the Israelites to work for 6 days and stop working on the seventh day. Now, how long did the Israelites understand those days to be? Work for 6 long periods of millions and millions of years? And rest for 1 long period of millions of years? Well, we hope we're in the rest period now, don't we? Because, well, no, see, let's ask this. Could God have created the world in 6 billion years if he wanted? Sure. What about 6 seconds if he wanted? Do you know he tells you exactly why he created it in 6 literal 24-hour days? To give humankind a pattern for their week. And when he says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and on the seventh day he stopped creating. What did the Israelites understand 6 days in Genesis 1 to mean? 6 literal 24-hour periods. What did they understand the seventh day to mean? 1 literal 24-hour period. God took 7 literal days to create things, and humans and dinosaurs were created on one of those, day 6. There's the problem. Well, how could that be the case when you have everything out there telling you dinosaurs and humans are separated by millions of years? Let me ask this question, and let's get real here. When was the last time a real New Testament Christian doctrine was popular? Jesus said, they hated me. And they'll hate you. When we look at what we teach about salvation and how a person needs to believe in Christ and be baptized into Christ for the forgiveness of those sins, for the forgiveness of their sins, is that a popular doctrine that is generally agreed upon across the religious world? No. It's very unpopular. In fact, Jesus Christ himself said, enter by the narrow gate. For broad is the gate and wide is the way that leads to destruction, and many go in by it, but narrow is the gate and difficult is the way that leads to life, and few there are who find it. It's almost like we understand that, but then when we get to some things, we think, yeah, but everybody's telling us it's got to be millions of years, so we don't want to look different than everybody else. Well, yes, we do, if what everybody else out in the world is teaching us something that's just simply not right. So let's see if we can nail down this idea. The Bible says dinosaurs and humans are created on the exact same day, day 6. So some people say, well, hold on just a second, man. How could humans live with dinosaurs? If a Tyrannosaurus Rex lives anywhere close to your neighborhood, do your kids get to go play outside? No, they don't. Because the Tyrannosaurus Rex has a 5.5-foot long skull filled with 60 razor sharp steak knife-like serrated teeth, and they can bite off a chunk of meat that weighs 500 pounds in a single bite. You're not letting your kid go outside and play anywhere close to a Tyrannosaurus Rex. So what we've been told is, hey, dinosaurs and people could not live together. Dinosaurs would have just been too powerful. Okay, let's think about that. They were huge. Some of them, like the Argentinosaurus, 126 feet long. But as we start looking at this idea, elephant. Can elephants kill people? Pretty effectively, actually. Their trunk weighs 400 pounds on a full-grown male elephant. They can beat a person to death with their trunk without ever even moving one of their legs. Now, generally speaking, that's not how they kill people. Their tusk weighs several hundred pounds apiece. They're made out of a very strong substance called ivory that you know. And if you were to look at the bones of this particular creature that can weigh 22,000 pounds, 11 tons, twice as much as a Nissan truck, would you think, hey, let's capture one of those and ride it? Or let's train it to do tricks. That's interesting, isn't it? You've got a 22,000-pound elephant that you can say the right word and it will raise its 400-pound trunk and let you wash under it. I mean, you're getting it to do more than you can get your 5-year-old to do washing behind his ears. That's impressive. So how does a 150-pound guy train a 22,000-pound elephant? You say, well, hold on just a second, Kyle. I mean, that's a plant eater. Well, a lot of the dinosaurs were plant eaters. Yeah, but what about like a really vicious meat-eating creature? I mean, come on, let's get real. Okay, let's do. Right there, you ever seen one of those? Killer whale weighs 10,000 pounds. They eat 3,000 pounds of mammal meat every single year. A couple killer whales or a pod of them can kill a 3,000-pound great white shark. These are literally the killers of the ocean. Now, think with me through this real simple mental experiment. You see the bones of this creature right there, a 12-foot-long, 10,000-pound meat-eating machine. He's got a mouthful of 30 razor-sharp teeth. All you find is the bones. And someone says, hey, I'll give you $100 to swim in a swimming pool with one of those. Do you take the $100? No, you don't take the $100 because from the bones, this creature looks like a meat-eating machine. And yet, we have been able to train this killer whale so that, well, I was down at SeaWorld years and years ago. We had a trainer who called the killer whale up onto the side just like that. She said some kind of word, did something there, and the killer whale opened its mouth. Now, these things eat 3,000 pounds of mammal meat every single year. The trainer stuck her head inside the mouth of the killer whale. The killer whale proceeded to bite. Okay, no. That's not what happened. What did happen? She stuck her head inside the killer whale. He kept his mouth open. She pulled her head out, and nothing happened to the trainer. Now, how is it that a 110-pound trainer can stick her head in the mouth of a meat-eating machine and pull it out and not have any worry about that? Well, we're going to get to that. But the idea that humans just could not live with dinosaurs is false. This guy right here is my favorite, Komodo dragon. Grows to be about 11 feet long, can weigh up to 200 pounds. Now, here's the thing, kind of like some of you guys that I saw back at the fellowship meal, it can eat 80% of its body weight in 15 minutes. Now, the way some of y'all are snoozing off, you're getting pretty close to that, weren't you? Yeah? I once had an elder tell me, he said, look, it was after a fellowship meal, he said, if you see me with my eyes closed, that's how I concentrate. Okay, some of you are concentrating really well on the lesson right now. Now, 80% of its body weight in a single meal in 15 minutes. That means it goes into the meal weighing 100 pounds. It walks out weighing 180 pounds. It has teeth that are razor sharp, and it can smell things with its tongue from about 2 or 3 miles away. It can run as fast as a horse can jog for short distances. And what it does, it has about 50 different bacteria in its mouth that cause terrible, terrible gangrene and infection. If it sees a deer or a wild pig, it runs at it in a sprint, bites it on the back of the leg. It lives on islands in Indonesia, so the thing can't go anywhere. It runs off a little ways and dies. The Komodo dragon then walks around the island sniffing where the thing died with its tongue, smells it, goes to it, calls all its buddies, and they go and eat the deer in 3 minutes, hoof, hair, everything, and digest it. The Komodo dragon. Let me tell you, this is not for the faint of heart, my friends. Yes, sure, only Luke 16 in that picture, but only the bravest, strongest, the men with the most mettle would grab a hold of a bronze statue of a Komodo dragon. Yes, that's the bronze statue that is at the Fort Worth Zoo. Now, I was this close to a Komodo dragon. You know how close this is? The thickness of the plexiglass that was separating me from the Komodo dragon. So we can catch these 150-pound creatures, and we can put them in a cage so that our two-year-olds can get that close to them? How is that? Well, as you start to look at the blue whale, biggest animal ever to have existed in the history of the world, to our knowledge, bigger than any dinosaur ever. It's got a tongue that you can put 50 grown adults on. 300 to 400,000 pounds. Twice as much almost as any dinosaur we've ever found. It's got a heart the size of a Volkswagen Beetle. And you know what we're real good at? Before the invention of electricity, we could stick some iron on a tip of a piece of wood in a wooden boat and row out to where a 100-ton blue whale was and harpoon it to such a degree that we almost killed them all. And that's without gunpowder or electricity. Now why? Why is that? Well, there's a real simple reason. Then God said, let us make man in our own image. According to our likeness, let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over all the cattle, all the earth. Be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth, subdue it, and have dominion. Now there's another verse that's very, very interesting in the book of James, chapter 3, talking about the tongue. But it says, for every kind of beast, of bird. Now get this, why do you think God intentionally put the word of reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no man can tame the tongue? What's he trying to tell you? Have people gotten killed by elephants? Sure. Did elephants hunt people to extinction because they're so much bigger? No. Have people gotten killed by blue whales and trying to harpoon them? Yeah, absolutely. But were we so good at it that we almost hunted them to extinction? Yes. People are in control of the animals of the world. Generally speaking, when people move into a place, what do the animals do? They move out, don't they? Now, they don't always move out because you run over a deer with your car. I was in East Tennessee not long ago, last weekend, and there was a big wild pig on the side of the road that someone had smashed their car against, and I'm sure their car looked much worse for the wear. But when humans move in, most of the time the wild animals move out. And generally speaking, which sized animals are some of the first to go? The biggest ones. So the idea that no humans could have lived with dinosaurs, well, it's just simply not true. They easily could have, because from the beginning, God gave humans the ability to have dominion over the biggest animals. And we have shown that's the case. Now, as we look at the next question, we ask a really good question. What does the Bible say about dinosaurs? If I were to ask you, just pick up your Bibles and turn to the passage that mentions dinosaurs. Go ahead. I'll give you a minute. You know what you're going to run into is the word dinosaur is not in the Bible. Okay, that's true. Look up pizza in your Bible. You going to find that? Okay, look up the word. Oh, there's several words that we could tell you to look up that wouldn't be in your Bible. Now, there'd be a good reason. Look up internet in the Bible. Is it going to be in there? No. There's some reasons for that. Number one, you speak English. Most all of you speak English. The word dinosaur is an English word that was invented in 1841. The Bible was written in Hebrew and Aramaic and Greek. Hebrew starting in 1450 BC and Greek by the end of the first century. If a dinosaur was in the Bible, would it be called a dinosaur? No, it would be something in Hebrew or Aramaic or Greek. We didn't invent the word dinosaur until 1841, and it's an English word, so you're certainly not going to read it in Hebrew. Second, okay, now let's try this. Open your Bibles to the place that mentions koala bears. Kangaroos? Panda bears. Okay, well, I guess that means God didn't create koala bears because the Bible doesn't mention them by name. Is that what the case would be? Well, certainly not. In fact, we can show that, yes, the Bible does mention dinosaurs by implication. And here's all that means. On day six, God made land animals. God made all land animals on day six. Dinosaurs are land animals. Therefore, God made dinosaurs on day six. It's that simple. It's the implication is as true as the explicit statements. So can we read in the Bible about dinosaurs being created? Yes, we can. When God creates everything in 6 days, and on day six he creates all land-living creatures, if dinosaurs are land-living, then God created dinosaurs on day six. That simple. Okay, so we've done our job. Although, that's not all we've got. In fact, we've got several other statements that I think are going to help us here. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and all that is in them. Would dinosaurs be included in all that is in them? Sure would. Okay? Now, let's ask the next question. Does the Bible mention any kind of creature that would sound like the description of a dinosaur? Remember, the word dinosaur doesn't come along until 1841. So if it's in Hebrew, it's going to be called something else, right? You go to Job. Let me set the stage for you. Job says, God, I just don't think you treat me fair. And I think if you and I had a discussion, you would realize that if I present my case to you, then you'd see that I'm right. But the problem here is, God, basically Job said, paraphrasing, that if you showed up, just your presence would kill me. So if you'll show up and not kill me when you show up, then I'll give you my case and I think you'll see I'm right. So in a very rare epiphany, God shows up to talk to Job. Not quite the outcome that Job expected. In fact, God starts asking Job some questions. Job, real simple question, where were you when I hung the foundation of the world on nothing? Oh, you weren't around then, Job. Job, do you know how I feed all the animals every single day? My kid has a hard time feeding his five chickens and dog during the day. But God feeds all the animals every single day. Job, do you know how I make sure everyone gets justice all over the earth? Okay, so he starts asking him these questions that Job cannot answer. And then he says, Job, I want you to look at the behemoth that I made along with you. Now, there's nothing accidental in your biblical text. The behemoth, now notice, which I made along with you. Now, what's the word behemoth mean? There's a difference between a translation and a transliteration. All right, Nacho does some translating for us when we go to Latin America with Latin American missions. Did years ago when I went to Peru with him, still does. He and Miss Beverly do great work over there. I still get to go over to the school in Panama and teach the preacher students there for a week each year on this, every other year on creation and evolution. Right, so Nacho translates the word dog into Spanish. And Nacho, what does the word dog in Spanish? Give us that word. All right, and you got to kind of roll your R's. That's why I'm getting Nacho to do it, because I can't really do it. Okay, so perro, P-E-R-R-O, doesn't sound anything like dog. D-O-G, perro. Nothing like it. But it's a translation. Meaning, in Spanish, the Spanish community understands this creature looks like this, and the English-speaking community understands what a dog looks like, Spanish people, what a dog looks like. And so perro and dog, it's a translation for the same creature. Now, what happens when someone uses a word, but you don't have the word in your language? You transliterate it, which means you just bring the sounds over. Okay, so quick language lesson for you today. What does the behemoth word sound like in Hebrew? The first sound is a what? Buh. The next sound is a what? Huh. Next sound is a what? Muh. The next sound is a th. In Hebrew, behemoth sounds remarkably like the English word behemoth. You know why? Because there's no translation for the word. Everybody that brings it over has no idea what creature is being discussed. They just say, we don't know what you're talking about, so we're going to transliterate the word exactly like it looks in Hebrew. So in Hebrew, behemoth. In English, behemoth. So now, we just need to ask ourselves, well, what does this creature look like? According to the description. This is 1901 American Standard Version. I love the 1901 American Standard Version. This is the version. This is a section of translator's notes that they put in there to try to help you understand the text a little bit better. In this case, I think they did a poor job, and here's why. They say, Behemoth must be an elephant or a hippopotamus. Why do you think the 1901 American Standard translator said an elephant or a hippopotamus? Because that's the biggest thing they had at the time. If there was a larger land-living creature alive in 1901, do you think they would have used that? Yeah, they would have, but there wasn't one. And so they just said elephant or hippopotamus. Okay, good. Let's see how the elephant or hippopotamus matches the description of the behemoth. He eats grass like an ox. Okay. His strength is in his hips. His power is in his stomach muscles. He moves his tail like a cedar. If you know every description in the Bible of a cedar, it's used to tell you something really, really big. Notice Psalm 92. The righteous shall flourish like a cedar in Lebanon. Indeed, Assyria was a cedar of high stature, whose height was like the height of the cedars. What are the highest branches of the high cedars? You know when someone says, maybe of a wrestler or a bouncer or something, he's as big as a house. What does that mean? The word as big as a house is used to describe and mean someone who's really, really big. Would anybody say he's as big as a house and someone thinks, yeah, like one of those little dollhouses, and that means he's really small? No. It's really easy to understand. When you say as big as a house, that means he's really big. When you say as tall or big as a cedar, that means it's something massively, remarkably huge. Okay, now let's take our elephant. This is an oriental cedar. Those are grown humans. At the base of that, here's your hippopotamus, here's your elephant. Does that look like a cedar to you? No, not a cedar. What about the hippo? Look like a cedar? No, that doesn't look like a cedar. Does this look like a cedar? Absolutely positively. In fact, God's whole point using behemoth is to say, it's the biggest creature on land that I've got. And I want you to look at him, Joe, because I made him at the same time as you, and he's got a tail that swings like a cedar, not to mention his body, his powers in his stomach muscles. And his tail swings like a cedar. And what creature matches that almost identically? A huge, massive abdomen, humongously tailed, long-necked, plant-eating dinosaur matches that description perfectly. And an elephant and a hippopotamus don't come anywhere close. In fact, humans have been harpooning hippopotami for years, all the way back to Egyptian Pharaoh days. And so you've got God using the biggest creature he's got. Now let's stop right here. You and I both know God created dinosaurs. The atheistic evolutionary community has hijacked them. They've stolen them from us. Do you know what is thrilling to a kid? A dinosaur. You know our number one best-selling book that's on that rack back there? Dinosaurs Unleashed. You know why? Because the authors are so insightful. And the text is so moving. Or it's got a picture of a Tyrannosaurus Rex on the front. Which of those two is it? Well, it's got a picture of T-Rex on the front. Because kids love dinosaurs. And so, the evolutionary community has hijacked the dinosaurs and said, let us teach you something false with these. Now, what were they designed to do? Show humans the power of the Creator. So isn't it time we took our dinosaurs back? We reclaimed them for God and started teaching our young people, hey, can you imagine this massive creature that God made? And if God can make a creature that big, just think how powerful and awesome he is. That's what they were used for to start with, and it's time that we take them back. Now, all right, yeah, we're not going to read that though, but here I am going to give you this. In virtually every single book, magazine, statement you ever read, you will hear this statement, no human being ever saw a live dinosaur. That is a false. Biblically, it's false. Historically, it's false. I'm going to show you what I mean by that. As we look all over the world, we find things that prove humans did see live dinosaurs. This is a carving on the side of the Kachina Natural Bridge in Blanding, Utah. It's a carving that was put there with several other hundreds or thousands of carvings. It can't be fake. It looks exactly from a carving standpoint like all the other carvings do. Right here is the carving of shoulders, head, human. This is the carving. I've outlined it for you so you can see it a little bit better. That the Anasazi Indians put there between 500 and 1500 AD. What does that look like to you? It looks like a dinosaur, no question about that. It's got a long neck, head, long tail, thick body in the middle. Now, we knew that was there, and so we went down there, found it. This is an evolutionary professor talking about this particular carving. He says there's a petroglyph in Natural Bridges, National Monument, that bears a startling resemblance to a dinosaur. The word startle. What does the word... Whoa. Was that startling? Was that startling to you? Oh, it was. Right. Startling. Okay, now we've got a better understanding of the word startling now. It's kind of scary. Some of y'all were asleep. You're like, no, the best. Okay, yeah. Some of you woke up with something coming out your head, but you thought, all right. Startling. You with me? Kind of scary? Now, when I walk into my house after work, sometimes my 9-year-old son will hide behind the door. And he will jump out and scare me. And it's startling. You know, why is something startling? Because you're not expecting it. Why would a person who is an evolutionist be startled at a carving that looks like a dinosaur? Well, that's not what he's expecting. He's always been told every single article, every single book, every single magazine, no human beings ever seen a live dinosaur. And then he sees one that matches the Anasazi Indian carvings. It can't be fake. And it looks just like a dinosaur. So he's like, what the? What? It can't be a dinosaur because he thinks that no human being's ever seen a live dinosaur. You ever seen one of these carvings in your science books? No, you haven't. Not in the science books that they use in any kind of school system. Why? Because if you start putting this stuff in, then you start shaking the foundations of evolutionary theory because humans and dinosaurs are supposed to be separated by 60 million years. Now, this is really the tip of the iceberg. We could keep going. The fact of the matter is, the kind of dinosaur that looks like just a few miles away in Blanding, Utah, there is a actual dinosaur fossil of the hip bone of that kind of dinosaur, which shows that those dinosaurs lived in the area and the Anasazi Indians could have seen them. The idea that no human beings ever seen a live dinosaur, that's absolutely positively wrong. Humans have seen a dinosaur. 1187, a guy by the name of Devarman VII built his mother a temple complex. We know this is from 1187. Know it for a fact. As you start looking at all the carvings all over this temple complex, you see all kinds of strange things, idols and things. But then there's this pillar that has, looks like all these animals carved on it, like a salamander, maybe an alligator or something. Then it has something maybe like some kind of a sheep or cow, got a thick body, short tail. And then it's got this. Well, what does that look like? You can't say it's fake because it's got the same patina built up in it as all the other things. Not only do most people identify that as a dinosaur, but they identify it as a stegosaurus. Now, if you can't say it's fake and you're an evolutionist and you don't want it to be a stegosaurus because you know it was carved in 1187 and that would put people carving an actual dinosaur in 1187, you got to call it something else. You got to say this isn't really a stegosaurus-like dinosaur carving. It's got to be something else. One guy, in all seriousness, said, no, it's not a dinosaur. That's a wild pig with bushes behind it. Those are really well manicured bushes, aren't they? And they happen to be spaced out perfectly across the pig's back. And that's a remarkably thick tail for a wild pig, if you ask me. You see what starts happening when you start with the idea that there's no evidence for humans that they lived at the same time as dinosaurs, but then you run into some? You got to start saying things like, well, that doesn't really look like a dinosaur. It really looks like a wild pig. And yet every third grader that you ask recognizes that it does look like a dinosaur. Continue with me. These guys, they're not really creationists even. All they do is study art in Cambodia. They took a picture of this carving, and here's what they said. Among the vertical strip of round jewels and the angle between the south wall of the porch and the east wall of the main body of the Kapura, there's even a very convincing representation of a stegosaurus. Now, they're not trying to prove that humans and dinosaurs live together. All they do is study the art of Cambodia. And they said, well, whatever you got to say, it looks like a stegosaurus. Is that a problem for a creationist? Is that startling for you? No. Because dinosaurs and humans lived at the same time, and if you didn't have a camera, what you would want to do if you wanted people in the future to know you had seen one of those, you'd carve it on a wall where it couldn't get destroyed, the carving. It's exactly what you'd expect. But that's not what you'd expect if you're an evolutionist. Continue with me. This one was interesting. They found the femur of a Tyrannosaurus rex. They were transporting it. They broke it open, and it looked like, well, it hadn't fully fossilized. They started taking some samples, and they realized that it had red blood cells and collagen inside of a bone they thought was 70 million years old. It wasn't even fully fossilized. What they should have said at that point is, wow, we've been real wrong on this. There's no possible way red blood cells, material, and collagen can last for 70 million years old. No, that's not what they said. You know what they said? No. Didn't know red blood cells could last 70 million years. They can't. So you find some soft tissue and red blood cell material in a bone that's not fully fossilized, and instead of saying we've been wrong about the 70 million years, you say there must be something that can hold red blood cells intact for 70 million years? And you see the problem with that kind of thinking. And the fact of the matter is, we could go on, we have scores of carvings and evidence that puts humans and dinosaurs together at the same time. So the biblical evidence shows, yeah, God made them on the same day. Historical evidence shows, yes, we've got examples of humans interacting with dinosaurs. Well, so where'd they go? You know, what you're told is 65 million years ago, a huge meteor hit the Yucatan Peninsula and caused fires and volcanic activity and caused so many of the animals to die out, and the dinosaurs died and went extinct as well. Now, the problem with that is, according to the evolutionists, sharks were around at the time of dinosaurs. Are they still around? According to evolutionists, turtles were around at the time of dinosaurs. Are they still around? According to evolutionists, crocodiles were around at the time of the dinosaurs. Are they still around? Yeah, so it just hit the dinosaurs and not the crocodiles and alligators and turtles and sharks. And the second thing is, we've really defined dinosaurs out of existence. And here's what I mean by that. Some of the dinosaurs were the size of a chicken. The word dinosaur means terribly great or fearfully great lizard. Are there any terribly great or fearfully great lizards still alive today? Oh yeah, crocodiles. Some of those saltwater crocodiles can get to be 32 feet long. That's from that wall to that wall almost. Some alligators. I read about an alligator not long ago. He was 24 feet long and weighed 2,000 pounds. Is that a fearfully great lizard? Is a Komodo dragon as big as that velociraptor that we saw? Yeah. So when you say fearfully great lizards are extinct, except the ones that aren't. Oh, okay. Yeah, true. But what about the ones that aren't? What about the ones that are extinct? Do you know that most animals from the past are now extinct? If you were to look at the fossil record and you were to see all of the animals that once existed, the huge three-toed sloth, the woolly mammoth, the saber-toothed tiger, the several saber-toothed things, that are all now extinct. Fact of the matter is, more animals are extinct from the past than are alive at the present. Animals go extinct, and generally speaking, the bigger ones go extinct first. Now, what is probably your best explanation for where the dinosaurs went? This is the Dinosaur National Monument. If you look right through this wall right here, there's no wall on the side of this building. It's built onto the cliff. So when you walk into this and you look over on that side of the wall, it's fossils all the way down. No bricks, no mortar, no stones, fossils. And these are some of the fossils that you see, that you will see. We took some of those pictures while we were there. And then on this left side, where there actually is building, there are placards and explanations of what you're looking at. It'll say this is the femur of a Tyrannosaurus rex, this is the backbone of an Apatosaurus, etc. This is the painted mural of what they say happened to cause the dinosaur fossils to be deposited there at the Dinosaur National Museum. Here is the word form of it. After a seasonal flood, this scene of 145 million years ago is based on clues found in the rock face behind you. Carcasses brought downstream by fast-moving, muddy water. Interesting. Do you know if you go to every flood, I mean, every single fossil graveyard in the world where there are hundreds or thousands of dinosaur fossils. Every single one of them, virtually every one, with rare or no exception, says these fossils were deposited by a local flood, by a seasonal flood, by a regional flood, by a flash flood, by a flood. All the way down. What would give you the best explanation for something that could deposit literally millions of dinosaurs and cover them up immediately? You're talking about covering up a creature that's body is some 20 feet tall. What's going to cover something up that big? And to fossilize, you have to get it covered immediately and keep it out of any oxygen. Most of the time when stuff dies, it doesn't fossilize. You run over a deer out here on I-55, and it's going to lay on the side of the road until it decomposes and stuff gets in. It's not going to fossilize. You've got to bury it immediately to get it to fossilize in the right place. What's going to bury literally millions of dinosaurs immediately and fossilize them all? A huge, massive, global flood. Okay, but hold on just a second, Kyle. Anthropocene Indians were carving pictures of dinosaurs in 1000 AD. That's true. So any dinosaurs that would have lived after the flood, they're land-living animals, so they would have had to have been on the... had to have been on that ark. That's the problem, isn't it? Ham, I fed that T-Rex yesterday, buddy. You got him today. I'm not messing with him. Do you ever read in the Bible where God said to Noah, go get the biggest pair of whatever it is that you can find to put on the ark? Did you ever say that? No, in fact, the Bible said that God was going to bring the animals to Noah. There was definitely some supernatural activity involved. But the biggest dinosaur egg we've ever found, 24 inches long. Now, that's 24 inches, and the creature grows up to be 126 feet long. And it starts out from a 24-inch egg. What could Noah and his family have done to get dinosaurs on the ark? Taken young dinosaurs that might have been newly hatched. That means they would have had several years in front of them when they got off the ark to be fruitful and to multiply. And those dinosaurs taken as young dinosaurs would have not taken up nearly as much room. They wouldn't have eaten as much food. They wouldn't have posed as much of a logistic problem for Noah. And the biggest dinosaur egg we've ever found is 24 inches. Are dinosaurs a problem for people who understand what the Bible really says? No. In fact, when you take all of the information that's out there, the information that is generally kept from the public, the information of the humans carving stuff that looks exactly like a dinosaur, and the evolutionists being startled that it looks like a dinosaur, if you put all that in a book and put it in front of kids, and then you explain that the Bible is literally, however you want to say it, the most historically accurate book ever written, and the Bible tells the scenario of creation, and it puts humans and dinosaurs created on the same day, and you add to that all the other information that you've got, dinosaurs are a problem, but they're not a problem for a creationist. Dinosaurs really, literally, are a problem for the evolutionist. Now, isn't it time we take our dinosaurs back and we use them for the purpose they were created, and that is to teach our young people how awesome and how powerful and how amazing a God is who can create a dinosaur. Let's take them back. And let's make sure that we're using them for the purpose that God designed them. I got to say, that's the end. You guys extremely patient with us. It's been a great weekend. Your attendance level has been phenomenal. Just off the charts, really. Generally speaking, I tell a group, if you have 100 people on a Sunday, then on the Saturday night, you'll have about 100 people. If you're lucky, if you've done a lot of good work, you'll have about that same number. Last night, we had probably over 200 people here. The fact that you have come to listen so carefully, to pay such great attention, is a tribute to you. It's a tribute to what you're thinking about, important things, and it's a tribute to the men who were able to see this as something very interesting and to put lots of time, effort, and money into this process. So thank the congregation here for what they have done, but don't let it end here. If this weekend we talked to 200 people last night, talked to 137 people today, and you all got a lot out of it, and you walk out that door, don't do anything with it, it's been a success, but not nearly the kind of success it could have been if we said, you know what, I know some kids that need to really know this information about dinosaurs. I'm going to get it to them. You know, I've got a friend at work that not real strong believer in the Bible and God, and I think if we just put this pamphlet, this booklet, this email address, this web address into his hands, he might go to this website and read some stuff that would change his life. Let me tell you what we're in the business of, in changing lives. We had an email to us, and the couple emailed us, and they said, we got on your website for the science stuff that you do. But while we were there, we read an article about how to become a Christian, how to be baptized for the forgiveness of sin. They said, we had always worked in faith-only churches, and we've never heard this, ever. So, they said, we went and tried to get people at our faith-only churches to baptize us, and they would not. Can you help us? And we said, wish we could, but we just can't. Is that what we said? No, that's not what we said. In fact, what we said was, thank you so much for contacting us. We got them in contact with a local congregation in their area and tried to get them plugged into the Lord's Church. You know, dinosaurs, they're fun to talk about, but it wouldn't hurt me if I never had another lesson on dinosaurs ever. But I'm going to need to, because there are a lot of people that have been told dinosaurs never existed, and that really is a problem for them as they look at the story of creation. You know, if I never use the law of cause and effect again to prove the existence of God, it wouldn't faze me a bit, except there are a lot of people that really, really need that. And so the question just to us is, how can we take what's been done this weekend and give it a broader spreading to make it as valuable and useful as it can be with each one of us in this auditorium using our sphere of influence to help people come to the knowledge, not just of God, not just of dinosaurs, not just of whatever it is we're talking about, but that knowledge taking them to their Creator, and then from their Creator to their Savior, and from their Savior to their responsibility to that God. That's what we're ultimately trying to do. And so let's do that. Sure appreciate you being here. Thank you for letting me be here with you.